Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
We didn't really reach agreement on most points because they just have a totally different interpretation of what a consent is, which is basically as long as the user is not screaming no, they consented to what they're doing, an interpretation I've never heard of before.
An Austrian law student meets with Facebook officials to discuss his ongoing privacy case against the social networking giant. Hello, and welcome to Spectrum. I'm Soruz Farivar in Bonn, Germany, with what's new in the world of European science and technology news. Meanwhile, in Finland, the makers of Angry Birds are rapidly expanding beyond video games.
Who are these birds and what are their hopes and dreams? And then after a season or two of like short animations and short stories, if we then start talking about full feature film production, then we already have like a vivid world of Angry Birds.
But first, the future of European e-books. All that and more this week on Spectrum. Last spring, we reported on a Spanish startup that wanted to tap into cloud computing to let people stream books online. The website 24 Symbols has started to offer thousands of books on a subscription basis, like Spotify does with music or Netflix does with movies. So far, 24 Symbols looks like a hit, and other websites have started to join the cloud reading trend. But problems, like the lack of a real unified digital market, continue to loom. Earlier this month, Italy hosted a major e-book conference called If Book Then. There, attendees tried to hash out some of the remaining issues in electronic publishing. Sean Sharigian reports from Milan.
Celebrated European critic Walter Benjamin once wrote, "A translation marks the afterlife of a work of art. In that light, cloud reading might be the afterlife of translations and other books. It definitely would have given Benjamin a run for his money."
We believe that this is a great moment for publishing. Once a book is digital, that means that everything changes, and everything changes for good or for bad. So there's lots of opportunities, both for publishers, for technology companies, and also for anyone that really loves books.
That's Justo Hidalgo, co-founder of 24 Symbols. He says the site's growth has been fantastic, especially considering it's still in startup mode.
Right now we are over 50,000 users. Taking into account that we spent €0 in marketing, so everything has been just by means of social media virality, that's absolutely great.
24 Symbols works simply enough. Once users sign up online, they can access a library of some 4,500 titles, mostly novels and books on management. They can be read via a web browser, smartphone, or tablet. With a continuous internet connection, you don't have to download anything, but just flip through the pages as you would browse a website.
El Spotify de los libros. Así es como ha sido...
Hidalgo says most users come from Spain, where news show Diario Expansión called the homegrown site a revolutionary idea. The site is using a novel payment method called freemium, where users can read everything for free but with ads, or access content without ads in packages starting at €10 per month.
There's a tendency now, there's a trend now, to especially younger people, they're starting to understand that there are some assets that don't need to be owned, that can be just consumed. Everything is changing towards a consumption, a service-based approach. That's the main thing that is attracting. So, okay, if I listen to music with Spotify, if I watch movies with Netflix, I need something similar with my books.
Earlier this month, 24 Symbols was one of the winners at SeedCamp, the prestigious startup competition for mentoring and investments. The site is looking to expand throughout Europe and increase its library, but it will face a new rival from the Netherlands called Widescript. With some 1,200 users and deals with three publishing houses, Widescript's site is just getting off the ground.
I still enjoy reading books on paper, but I think that books online can make a difference with educational content, specifically. I think being able to collect a summary of your notes and things like that really give an edge to digital.
That's Widescript's founder, Francisco Trisi. He's referring to one special service on the website that lets users collate their notes. He hopes to carve a niche by targeting the educational market. The European ebook market as a whole looks like it's still up for grabs. However, Spanish publishing analyst Javier Celaya sees an impending threat from U.S. giants like Amazon. He says it took just a few months for Amazon to claim 80% of the UK's ebook market.
If we don't do anything, if we continue seeing this whole transformation process, it's going to happen the same thing in France, Italy, Spain, Germany.
For its part, Widescript is making deals with publishers to distribute their content for free. The site gives valuable analytics to publishers and streaming nonfiction books to users. Given 24 Symbols and Widescript are both eyeing Western European markets, they might soon be in competition with each other. But Saleya says in the long run, European publishing houses and related businesses might have to join forces or die.
The only way we can fight back and guarantee the industries we have been able to create for the last 2 centuries will be to create a platform that provides European cultural content at worldwide level.
That's a proposition an old-school critic like Walta Benjamin might well have approved of. Shant Sharagyan, Deutsche Welle Radio, Milan.
Now, people use their iPads for more than just reading. In fact, lots of people use them for gaming, too. And one of the most popular games is Angry Birds. The Finnish company behind Angry Birds, Rovio, is set to launch the Facebook version of the game on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And after having been released for just over 2 years, the game has exploded beyond mobile phones and computers. There's merchandising of all kinds, with stuffed animals, t-shirts, you name it. In fact, Angry Birds may have just taken over the cool tech mantle from that other Finnish tech giant, Nokia. Peter Teffer reports from Helsinki, Finland.
Last fall, Rovio opened its first official merchandise store here in its home city. In fact, recently, I met a fan of the game, a British guy called Stacy. He walked through the snow for more than half an hour from downtown Helsinki to the hard-to-find Verkkokauppa department store to visit the official Angry Birds store.
I must admit, I thought it would be bigger, but the variety is okay. My friend in England wanted a yellow bird keyring, so I got that. And I got myself a t-shirt, so that was cool.
Most companies would dream for that level of devotion. And that's the thing about Angry Birds. It's been a rather surprising runaway hit. Even though Rovio, the studio behind Angry Birds, has been around since 2003, it was little noticed until late 2009. But now that the characters have become famous, the company is focusing on merchandising, says Ville Heijari, a company vice president.
For 2011, the bulk of our business was still applications and games, and our main source of income was like sales and partnerships around those. For this year, we're looking at very, very significant growth of the merchandise business as well. And this year, we're really, really bringing a lot of merchandise in different parts of the world into stores and pushing our own retail efforts as well.
The game is coming to Facebook on Valentine's Day. Because Indonesia is one of the world's largest areas of Facebook use, Rovio is launching a special Indonesian version of the game as well. But beyond the game, Rovio is also making licensing deals with toy companies. Mattel has released 2 board games, and just last month, a company called Tactic announced it will release an officially licensed outdoor game this summer.
Angry Birds will fly outside this summer.
But is it that smart to focus purely on one brand, wonders Antti Oksanen. He is the editor-in-chief of several Finnish technology magazines. All the new games and levels that have come out so far have been around the same idea, launching birds to hit pigs.
They like to compare themselves to Disney, but of course Disney has many sub-brands and, you know, constant production of new games and apps, and of course that's something that Rovio should be able to do as well.
Oksanen adds that Rovio can't rely on the angry bird who let the golden egg forever, but other Finnish industry experts disagree. Jari Tamisto is the CEO of Mobile Monday, a network of meetings with entrepreneurs from the mobile industry.
1 out of 53 games becomes success, so if they would develop next 5 ones that fail, you know, where would they be at the moment? Because everybody thought, okay, they have to develop something last year, they have to develop something this year. They don't have to.
But does a popular game create enough basis for other media forms? Again, Rovio Vice President Ville Heijari.
If you would make a list of like widely successful films based on video games, that would probably be like one of the shortest lists ever made. So that is a huge challenge, and that's why we are creating a lot of stories around the characters.
There have been comic books and various short animation stories on YouTube. The most recent video coincided with the new update of the Angry Birds season game, Year of the Dragon.
We can get to like really know these characters, like
who are these birds and what are their hopes and dreams? And then after a season or two of like short animations and short stories, if we then start talking about full feature film production, then we already have like a vivid world of Angry Birds.
The rise of Rovio has come as that other famous Finnish tech company, Nokia, has fallen. Michael Pachter, a gaming industry analyst at Wedbush Security, says, however, you can't see Rovio as the next Nokia.
Selling 100 million handsets at a couple hundred dollars a piece is a lot more ambitious than selling a couple hundred million free downloads of a game. So no, I don't think that Rovio will be that big. No chance.
So far, Rovio's focus on the Angry Birds franchise has turned out well. The company grew from 12 to 240 employees and is opening new offices. Soon, a studio will open in the Finnish city of Tampere, and this spring will also see Rovio's first office outside of Finland, in Shanghai, China. Peter Teffer, Deutsche Welle Radio, Helsinki.
Coming up, the case of Europe versus Facebook. But first, here's Holly Fox with the news.
Over the weekend, thousands of people in many European countries protested the anti-piracy treaty known as ACTA. An increasing number of European states have said that they are holding or stopping their support for the controversial treaty. The treaty would create a new international body to stop online piracy and counterfeit goods. Opponents are concerned that it would impose overly harsh penalties. Protests took place all over the continent, including in Zagreb, Tallinn, Munich, and Paris. While beers and wines generally have glasses designed to highlight their taste characteristics, when it comes to champagne, the flute and coupe have happily coexisted. Glassmakers, however, may have to rethink their stemware recommendations after reading research published last Wednesday in the online journal PLOS-1. Scientists from the University of Reims in France found that glass shape influences an invisible cloud of carbon dioxide and other volatile organic compounds that forms above champagne and impacts the drinking experience. In other news from France, the French government has announced that French citizens living abroad would be able to vote over the internet for the first time. The 1 million French living outside the country are set to be assigned 11 members of parliament for expatriates. If successful, the hope is that this system could be extended to other elections. Few countries in the world allow internet voting. Estonia became the world's first country to do so in a general national election in 2007. The French parliamentary election is set for June of this year. This week, a delegation from a Russian government innovation hub is set to visit the UK. The Skolkovo Foundation began construction on its new campus last fall. The Russian government is hoping that this new area will attract new startups and research. The Kremlin is trying to fight brain drain, with the country's top minds leaving the country in search of better opportunities abroad. Sergey Brin, one of Google's founders, left Russia as a young child. Skolkovo representatives plan to visit the famed universities of Cambridge and Oxford, as well as the Imperial College of London. The Slovakian startup Piano Media has been expanding its online paywall system to neighboring Slovenia. Piano Media offers a payment setup where online media websites can join together and make it easy for internet users to pay a small amount of money to access their content. Since its debut in May 2011, 12 publishing houses have joined the consortium. Users currently pay under €3 per month to access over 50 Slovakian websites, a fee that will rise to €4 soon. And finally today, a little space news. On Monday, the European Space Agency, or ESA, successfully launched its small launch rocket Vega. The rocket was built to carry smaller payloads containing satellites for scientific and Earth observation missions. The Vega program was launched by the ESA in 1998 to complement the ESA's heavy Ariane 5 and medium Soyuz rockets. Its design is unique in that it can accommodate a variety of different payload configurations and can carry multiple smaller satellites in addition to a main one. Monday's mission contained a total of 9 small satellites.
Holly Fox with the news there. You're listening to Spectrum on Deutsche Welle Radio. I'm Cyrus Farivar. Now, If you're like me and you're never near your actual radio, feel free to download Spectrum as a podcast. Take us with you on your commute or listen at your computer whenever you like. Every day when I bike to work, I always have my favorite podcast in my earbuds. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's going on. Beyond that, come and interact with us, see what I'm reading, and get a taste of what we're working on between shows on Twitter at @DW_SciTech. Send me a message, and I will write you back. Promise. And now, it's time for Digital Europe.
Digital Europe, bringing the continent's tech scene to your ears.
Executives from Facebook last week held direct talks with an Austrian student group challenging the social networking site's privacy policies. The meeting came after a ruling by the Irish Data Protection Commission, which criticized Facebook and upheld many of the students' claims. The Irish authority has jurisdiction because Facebook's international headquarters are in Dublin, and therefore the company is bound to follow European law. As Carrie Skyring reports from Vienna, the group known as Europe versus Facebook is reporting some progress on its concerns, but is still far from satisfied with Facebook's privacy policies.
A small group of students, not more than about 10, make up the core of Europe versus Facebook. Their leader and spokesman at this press conference is Max Schrems, a law student at Vienna University. He's a Facebook user and says he's not against Facebook itself. He just wants it to obey Europe's privacy laws. Now, after direct talks with two Facebook executives, he still has doubts about the company's commitment to European law.
Generally, they were super friendly, but I had the feeling that they still don't really know how European law works. They just reinterpret it somehow, and then they stick to their reinterpretation of European law. The other thing that I was wondering about is that a lot of the stuff they're doing seems to be just like some big patchwork where they don't really know what they're doing in the end. So whenever you ask about details, they can't really explain how it works.
Facebook and Europe versus Facebook were directed to have talks by the Irish Data Protection Commission. That's where Max and his group lodged 22 complaints against Facebook, including allegations it collected private data without the user's permission and that it held on to data after the user had deleted it. Now the students and the giant social network site are in a process which is meant to resolve their dispute. But Max Schrem says it's absurd that a group of students with few resources is left to deal with a multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation.
Like, that's my biggest problem with the situation right now, is that we are kind of the couple of students that is now representing the rest of all the Facebook users. And that is a problem I'm seeing, that that's not done by some government body, by someone that's elected. So that's the reason why we try to be as transparent as possible about this meeting. I want to be totally sure that no one has the feeling that there was some like bargaining in the background or something like that.
Perhaps more than can be said for Facebook, which did not talk to the media after the meeting. Instead, they issued a short statement saying Facebook is committed to resolving the complaints and has started an extensive program of privacy improvements. They're also responding to new European Union regulations on data protection and privacy. Announcing these last month, the European Commissioner for Justice, Vivian Reding, singled out the Austrian students, saying in future their complaints would be handled differently.
In future, this student will go to his Austrian regulator, and the Austrian regulator will be in contact with the Irish regulator and ask the Irish regulator to solve the problem. This will be done on basis of the same rules which will be applicable to Austria and to Ireland. And once the problem has been solved, then the Austrian regulator brings this back to the Austrian citizen.
That still sounds rather complicated, but under the new rules, companies like Facebook will have to ask users if they can store and sell their data to other businesses. That's been welcomed by citizens' rights groups, such as the Austrian-based Quintessence. Their president, Georg Markus Kainz, says it's about time the EU stepped in.
I think it's very important that data protection is now in the hands of the European Union and not only in the national states, because we live in a global world with a global system, with a global internet, and a little country like Austria isn't able anymore to protect our rights in this global world.
There'll be another round of talks before the two sides head back to the Irish authorities to say whether they've resolved the complaints. Max Schrem says some progress has been made, with Facebook apparently ready to publish the categories of data it collects from users. But a major sticking point is the issue of the user's consent for Facebook to collect and use its data.
most of it is information issues. So for the issue of consent, so that the user actually consents to what's happening on Facebook, we didn't really reach agreement on most points because they just have a totally different interpretation of what a consent is, which is basically as long as the user is not screaming no, he consented to what they're doing, an interpretation I've never heard of before.
Georg Markus Kein says Europe and the Austrian students are a big headache for Facebook. And it's because Europeans have a different attitude to privacy.
They have learned that we in Europe think differently and stronger about our privacy, and they adjust the system now to fit into our system, our thinking, our use of the internet.
And whatever the outcome of the current tussle, Max Schrems sees even tougher regulations on the horizon, and not just in Europe.
The legislation is going to be tighter in the US as well as in Europe, and they will have to stick to it sooner or later, but I think right now they're still thinking of how long they can push it out. Probably we have like 2 or 3 more years without tight regulation, but I think they also know that the longer they push it and the more they kind of try to limit that, the harder the legislation is going to be in the end.
Facebook recently announced plans to become a public company. It's expected to be valued at between $70 and $100 billion. A risk to its business model, acknowledged by Facebook, is legislation restricting its ability to gather and use private data. There's a lot at stake in the battle known as Europe versus Facebook. Kerry Skyring, Deutsche Welle Radio, Vienna.
If you like, you can download Digital Europe as a separate podcast. Just search for DW Digital Europe in iTunes. Now, in that piece, we heard from European Justice Commissioner Viviane Reding. Earlier this month, she put forward a major revision to existing European data protection law. As she said in that piece we just heard, one of its main points is to streamline the process of data protection law across the entire European Union, rather than having these individual data protection authorities in each of the 27 member states. In fact, she spoke at a day-long conference about these new revisions last week in Brussels. Also in attendance were other activists and members of government agencies. I was there too, and so to learn more about these new proposals, I sat down with Joe McNamee. He's the EU Advocacy Coordinator at European Digital Rights, based in Brussels.
This new proposal that Commissioner Reding has set forward outlines a lot of things. It attempts to streamline some of the data protection rules that currently exist in the European Union. It proposes some new things, like the right to be forgotten and these kinds of things. But as we were addressing a moment ago, it seems a bit early to me. Am I understanding that right?
It's very early. I mean, we're looking at possibly 3, even maybe 4 years before the text is actually finalized. What the Commission wants to do now is to set principles as strongly as possible, so that the other institutions will find it difficult to propose something else or to weaken principles more than the Commission would like. So there's a tactical game going on in the institutions as well as a simple legislative proposal.
How does it break down within the European Union, kind of politically speaking? I mean, are there certain countries or certain factions that want it to go one way and certain factions or certain countries that want it to go another way?
Well, the countries that have weak data protection regimes at the moment did so.
So that would include?
The UK and Ireland are the most obvious examples, chose that route. So obviously they're not going to be too keen on a strict regime. So, and then other countries like Germany have got some rules that are actually stronger than the existing proposal, and there's some resistance from certain parts of the German media, the German legal profession, to the rules being too weak. So the final version is obviously going to be somewhere between the two.
Well, and also it seems to me, coming back to the case of Germany in particular, is that given that Germany has this system, which as far as I know doesn't exist anywhere else in the European Union, of not only having a federal data protection authority but having individual state data protection authorities within Germany that themselves have a considerable amount of sanctionary power against companies that violate data protection. We've seen this many times with Google and Facebook over the last year. This new proposal doesn't seem to touch that at all.
It doesn't touch the...
In other words, it doesn't change that process, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it doesn't change the process. The key thing and the extremely important thing that it does do is it requires member states to have data protection authorities that are actually able to do the job. And that's a big leap forward for a lot of European countries.
One of the things that also strikes me about this new proposal is that the Commissioner Reding and others who are behind this seem to have said, well, we are now going to make companies and institutions and entities outside of the European Union party to this agreement, that if you're a business in, let's say, the United States that is offering a service that potentially could be available to Europeans, then you have to follow our rules too. And it seems to me that's a huge, broad, overly broad definition that can't possibly actually be implemented.
Well, the sad thing is that it's actually not that new, but it's so disastrously badly implemented that it sounds new.
What does that mean?
It means that we have a thing called the Safe Harbor Agreement of the United States, which is widely considered to be barely more than a joke at this stage. We have rules on binding contractual clauses for transfer of data to third countries, which have been extremely difficult to implement. So the situation is that there is, in the existing legislation, restrictions on what foreign companies can do with European data, but the processes that are in place don't work.
Just one last thing. Part of this proposal that I think gets a lot of attention is this so-called right to be forgotten. And this came up in our discussions in this conference that we've been having earlier today. A colleague from Spain mentioned the point. He said, how do you know that Facebook has really deleted your photos? How do you know that Company X has really deleted the data that they claim to have deleted, you know, to make you forgotten from the internet?
Well, there was an article that I read just yesterday which indicated that people's pictures that they thought deleted from 2008 and 2009 are still available on Facebook. The difference now is that they would be breaking the law and subject to proper punishment from a proper authority with the powers to do so. So today, Facebook has little to fear by abusing personal data like that. The day after tomorrow, or perhaps the day after that, when the data protection regulation comes into force, they will, they hopefully will have something to fear.
So in other words, you know, you really don't know, but unless this data does turn up, then there's some kind of sanctionary power behind it.
Yes, and one of the things that's important when we're talking about data protection authorities having powers, it should be having full powers, technical powers, to go in and assess exactly what's being retained and not deleted. And in the Facebook example of the images that haven't been deleted for the last 4 years, that did become public. That has been shown to be the case. So it's not a situation where when these things happen, nobody ever finds out about it.
All right. Joe McNamee, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Joe McNamee is the EU Advocacy Coordinator at European Digital Rights. That's all for this week on Spectrum. Want to learn more about something you heard on the show? Send us a message on Twitter at DW_SciTech. In between episodes, you can always find daily news updates at DW.de/science. Email us your questions and comments to feedback.english@dw-world.de. Also, please be sure to put Spectrum in the subject line. From Deutsche Welle Radio in Bonn, Germany, I'm Cyrus Farivar, and thanks for listening. Tourists wear their wallets in high places when abroad, so as not to be ripped off in ways to which they're not apprised. Lawyers write some goofy terms and letters to the future, so as not to get all screwed by methods hereinafter devised. So will I. And I guess I will protect myself from you. Sometimes I get so tickled I can't talk, but I will protect myself from you. I'll keep on reminding me I'm always free to walk. You're
not exactly what I'm looking for.